Welcome back, New Talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcast. Podcast 642 is a walk and talk podcast in the beautiful velvet smoothness of the shortest summer night of the year. So, yeah, people have been asking me questions about my trip, and they are surprising. And it's a great opportunity to share some experiences on the trip with you, and we're going to do that in Podcast 642. Well, of course, when I was on the trip, I was driving Mobile Podcast Command, which is a diesel 450 Super Duty ambulance 2000. It's ancient, and it performs brilliantly, and it came from xgovernmentcars.com. Now, if you thought you knew ex-government cars, this is the place where the Crown Vicks, the Dodge Chargers, the Chevy Impalas, and things like that. I want you to think again, because ex-government cars now has a broad selection of newer, better, low-mileage vehicles than ever before. We are talking about Expeditions and Yukons from Homeland Security. Ed is searching far and wide to find really good, reliable cars. These are one-owner, fleet-maintained government vehicles. So again, we're talking about the Dodge Chargers, the comparable Crown Vicks while they last, Ford Expeditions, GMC Yukons, also the Chevy Impala V8s, and more. And you get great deals from owner Ed Johnson. They have 30 lenders to get you approved fast, plus they have the work trucks and all kinds of other stuff. I'm telling you, this is one of the best automotive deals that there is, and not just in the upper Midwest, but in this country, because this guy has the best selection of these dependable vehicles in the country. So get your butt down to xgovernmentcars.com, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. Check out what they have at xgovernmentcars.com or somewhere. I've got the number here. I usually don't give out their phone number anymore. I just do. Yeah, you can call them old school at 763-777-8782.
xgovernmentcars.com.
I'll tell you the people I kind of envied on the trip, because I have the truck, and of course the truck has lots of equipment in it, and I need it because all my audio stuff is in the truck as I tour, but it's really fun to see people taking long motorcycle trips, and there's a lot of that as people crisscross the country going to various, you know, motorcycle rallies. There's one in Laconia, New Hampshire. My motorcycle guys, Ciro3D.com, were there. We are all getting ready for Sturgis. Ciro3D.com will have the truck and all of their great motorcycle parts and accessories and products at the Black Hills Harley-Davidson dealer in Rapid City. So just before you get to the turnoff for Sturgis, you know where that Harley dealer is in Rapid City. That is where Ciro3D will be for Sturgis. And the reason I talk a lot about Ciro3D is, first of all, the lighting options. If you click on that banner at the top of the page, the BobDavisPodcast.com, that banner shows you the rear lighting options so you and your significant other can be seen. And usually, if it's a female, they do want to be seen back there. They, you know, and any rider would want to be seen. Great lighting options and solutions, as well as all kinds of other solutions, all kinds of air cleaner covers, great foot pegs that are fabulous and fully endorsed by guys that are a little bit bigger than the average bear that ride. And like I said, the safety for the lighting options front and back. So, happy touring. We'll see you at Sturgis. That's going to be the next big thing. Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com, or click on Ciro3D. Sign up to get one of their new catalogs. It is fabulous. Okay? Ciro3D.com. So in this Walk and Talk podcast, usually I will just talk about what has occurred to me, but I'm not going to do that in this podcast. I want to talk about people have actually asked me some really good questions about the trip. And on the trip, people asked some really good questions. I just came back from a long trip around the country, around the middle part of the country. So I went very quickly. I went south. I went west and then south in Minnesota, down through Iowa to Missouri. I actually went to Kansas first, because I went to Kansas City and then I went to Missouri on this storm chasing trip, and I interviewed a storm chaser, and then I went down to Oklahoma. I also came back up to Kansas at one point, and then from Oklahoma, I went east across Arkansas into Tennessee, all the way to Chattanooga, from Memphis to Chattanooga, and then into North Carolina and Southern Virginia, and then finally up to Richmond, and then into the western part of the state, near sort of not close to but near Buena Vista, so it's close to the Shenandoah Valley there in the mountains to the west in Virginia. Then I went from there to West Virginia and on up into central Ohio, where I visited the ancestral home of my dad's side of the family, a mining town in Ohio. You heard that podcast. And then I went on up through Ohio and Indiana to south of Chicago, where I hung out with a friend, and then on up to Glenview, where I had some business, and then on to a show in Eau Claire, which I didn't stay at, and then back to Minnesota. So all on back roads. So I didn't spend very much time on freeways at all. And in fact, I had intended at the beginning of the trip, I had intended to go down 35 through Iowa because I figured why waste time in Iowa? And I ended up getting turned around. So I went out 394 and then 12 all the way west and then connected with, I don't even remember what it was, a state or U.S. highway that went down south through Iowa and on down through you know, to Kansas and then Missouri ultimately. And these were really, these were farm roads, back roads. And I stayed completely away from civilization, even though, of course, small towns, that's civilization. But, you know, I stayed pretty much away from all the big cities, except for a couple of different times where I stopped. I stopped in Kansas City. I stopped in Chattanooga. Obviously, I stopped in Memphis. But I didn't go to anywhere near big cities, and I was on back roads most of the time. So the first thing that I would say as an experience, I really got to the point where I was really enjoying just being in the middle of nowhere most of the time. There were many, many days in, you know, this trip, Missouri and Kansas and Oklahoma and Arkansas all through where, and I'm driving during the day too, so it wasn't just nighttime driving. I was the only vehicle on the road for a long time. I didn't see, there was one road I was on in Missouri and I didn't see a car all day. It was weird until sundown. I started to see cars. That was a great experience. And I recommend that for, and it's, you know, people are like, well, how can you, that was one of the questions that was asked. Well, how can you do that? Do you use Google? Because Google always puts you on toll roads or routes you, and this is their perception, you know, to and through the major cities and everything else. I don't use Google. You know, I use maps. You know, I sit down with a map and I look at, you know, I figure out how I can move around a state and to another state without going on an interstate. And sometimes you're running right next to the interstate, but most of the time you're cutting. So if the interstates basically form squares or diagonal angles to various towns, that's the way it's set up. So, you know, if you're hauling something, let me take a sip of coffee. Standing down here in the park, you can get, you know, your rutabagas from Tupelo to, you know, Las Cruces, right? And without too much thought, you can get around. But the thing is, if you carefully, if you think about what you're doing, if you take state highways and U.S. highways, the old, you know, national road systems and stuff that are actually pretty good highways across the country, you can cut corners off of those curves and those sharp, you know, those sharp corners that you often have to go far. You go out of your way to go north. So you go north out of your way and you turn, and then you turn on a hard angle and you go west for a while. But when you're on side roads, you can sort of angle up and you actually, you go slower and you pass through towns and you have to watch your speed and stuff, but you actually cut a huge amount of time off your trips. So it's much more relaxing to travel that way. The only problem is that you know, I find myself, you know, you really have to figure out where you're going to stay. And if you can't stay in a Walmart parking lot, if you listen to those travel podcasts, you heard it, you have to go to a campground, which costs money, or you have to figure out, you have to do, I will then do a search for a truck stop and try to get near an interstate, because usually the truck stops are off the interstates. So the first experience that I would say was great with this trip was, now I'm traveling on back roads, and what I'm learning to do is navigate around the country without using the interstates, and it's usually faster. And it's kind of fun, because once you kind of know, and I've been through most of these states many times, you kind of know where you are and what roads you have to take. It becomes almost instinctive, and you will get lost, but at the same time, you save time. So it's really interesting to me to figure out how to get from point A to point B faster than it would if I just took the interstate, and way less boring, and plenty of places to stop and have experiences. So that was probably the greatest thing, is just seeing America from the back roads. And it looks pretty good. And I've often said this, I don't want to get into politics in this podcast, but, you know, there's a lot of people that say that, you know, things are bad in America and everything else. I mean, if you listen to the Gloucester podcast, which involves mining, yes, things are not good in Gloucester, Ohio, but in other places, they're pretty good. You know, it's always interesting to me to see these really prosperous towns of 10 and 11,000. You know, they're really small towns. You wouldn't even think about them. Somerset, Ohio, you know, places like that that are really fairly prosperous. And, you know, they have all the things that they need, and they have nice little town squares, especially in Ohio. They're big on that. And the hill towns in West Virginia and places like that are a little less prosperous. Arkansas, depending on where you go. And I don't want to get into a long travel look about what's prosperous. It's just the experience of traveling like that is so much like sailing. It's just so interesting because you're tacking. So you tack from one, because you have an objective. So I'm going to Chattanooga. Well, I can go on 24, or I can take these back roads through the mountains and see some stuff. And that's so much better. Because what I used to do, I used to take the Crown Vic, and I mentioned this in one of the podcasts on the road, and I would pile everything in the Crown Vic, and I would literally drive 14 hours, you know. This is before I got the truck, so this is 5 years ago. I would drive 14 hours straight through to get from point A to point B and not even know where I was, because I was just hell-bent for leather to get to this place that I was going. And now that I have the truck and it really doesn't matter where I'm going to stay or whether or not I get there or anything else, I can just cruise along and enjoy myself and just look at stuff and try to get to know people in those towns and figure out what's going on in those places and kind of have some conversations. Not all of them on the record. So that was one of the best experiences of the trip, was that having that experience of being able to, just tour like that. That was one of the best things, is being on the back roads. And somebody asked me at one point, why do you do this? Why do you take these long? I mean, I was gone for a month, you know, and every time I go out, I go for quite some time. When I covered the campaigns, I was out there for, I think it ended up being 2 months, that trip, almost 2 months. And believe me, when we start getting back into campaigns, or when I find something to cover that I'm interested in covering, you know, I may stay out longer than that. And I'm kind of working toward being able to do that and run my business and everything from the road, so I can stay out for 3 or 4 months if I choose to, because it's so interesting when you're just out and you don't really have a schedule and you can just see what's going on in this country. Think, for example, and this is, I think, why I do it and why I love it so much. We spend most of our time, you know, so we have a job and, you know, we go and we go to our job. Now, for some people who are consultants and stuff and they travel for their jobs, they don't see the country. They get in a plane and they fly to a location and they go to a Holiday Inn or something, or a DoubleTree. They do their business at an office, and they may as well be home, right? Because they Uber to, you know, whatever the location is, do the thing that they need to do, and then they leave. Maybe they have a dinner or something, right? They don't really linger, and they're not fully mobile, okay? And when we work in a town or a city, we get up every day in our house, we make ourselves our breakfast, we get some coffee, and we get in our car, and we drive the same way every day to a location, and we do our job. And there's nothing wrong with this. I'm not complaining about it. You know, you do your job, you come home, and you're home. And maybe 3 times a summer, you go up to the lake, or maybe you have a camper and you take a trip with your kids, or, you know, you take a vacation in the winter someplace that you usually fly to, okay? And you don't really see everybody else doing what they do. And every town is like that. Everybody has a job, they drive to the job, whatever. When you're out there overlanding, you're a vagabond. And you're just seeing all these things going on. So you perceive things differently. You know, somebody said to me a long time ago, happiness is a clean windshield and a full tank of gas. And it really is for me. You know, there's a sense of unlimited, you know, no limits. You know, you're completely free. If you want to go south, you can go south. If you want to go north, you can go north. And the biggest problem I have on these trips is not letting my, you know, natural goal setting tendencies that you can't just drive around. I don't believe you can just go out and just wander around. You may as well just be on vacation, and then you're just going to complain because you spent 2 weeks driving around somewhere that, you know, whatever. That's why I want to do every trip has a reason. Storm chasing, you know, covering politics, going to an event, whatever, because there's an objective to get to the event. So you tack to that objective, and that's what makes it fun. But, you know, and I think I mentioned this a couple times in podcasts, you can't let the objectives be so tight and so overwhelming that it ruins your opportunity to kind of look around and to say, you know what I like in this town? I'm going to stay here and have lunch today, and I might just stay here tonight. I don't know. That's the kind of thing that I love about it, because there's a sense of freedom and a sense of being able to break loose. And most of us, when we travel, we're always on a schedule because you only have a week or something. But when you go and you just go, it's great, because if you want to go to Tuscaloosa and you're 30 miles away, you just go. You know, my son and I, you know, if you heard that podcast, I knew he was going to go through Wichita, and I thought, you know what, I'm 60 miles away or 160 miles away. I'm just going to go over there. And I went over and I called him up and said, where are you? And he was like, well, I'm just getting into Kansas. And I said, you know, meet me at this truck stop or whatever it was. It was one of those wayside things. And it was so cool to, you know, be there, and he rolls up in his Jeep with his U-Haul, and I'm sitting there in my truck, and he's got the dog, and we had a nice conversation and a cup of coffee, and he went his way, and I turned around and went south to Norman, and it was really cool. That was one of the coolest things that happened on the trip. Now, we're not going to talk about it in this podcast, but obviously crisscrossing the country, I got to see prosperous towns and non-prosperous towns. A lot of it has to do with manufacturing, especially when you get into Ohio and when you get into Indiana. And I will tell you this, the level of manufacturing and growth in Indiana is amazing. With the new president, there's going to be a lot of talk about foreign manufacturing, because he is going to drive hard bargains to try to get manufacturing back to the United States. At least that was the pledge to voters in 2016. In this, both for political reasons and also because there are reasons to manufacture in the United States, some companies are preparing to bring their manufacturing back to the United States. If this is you, if you're in the decision-making chain for one of these companies and you're thinking about bringing American manufacturing back to the United States, bringing your manufacturing back to the U.S., please think about DepoStar, D-E-P-O-T, DepoStar. They're in Ramsey, Minnesota. They do medical devices. They do electronics. They do all kinds of engineering, design, and manufacturing, and they do it in the United States. Visit their website at DepoStar.com. So I'm recapping some experiences from the trip because people have asked me why I do it. I've kind of explained that. Not really in depth, but a little bit. It gives me a sense of freedom and release, and adventure. And, you know, I'm in business for myself. Obviously, there's pressures to grow the business, and I do think it can be negative. I mean, I think part of it is an escape from the pressures of dealing with the day-to-day of the business, although the business follows me. But it also is a good thing because it helps me put things in perspective and helps me just think. It's a great time to do strategic planning. I think companies should actually give their people for strategic planning. They should give the teams, you know, RVs and just go, you're going to be gone for a month. And you just come back with some ideas and come on. And maybe you could schedule some conference calls and stuff like that and some Skype chats to kind of keep them on track. But I think it would be great to take your team on the road, like three people in a vehicle, and just go in four different directions and look at the world, because you see businesses all over the place. You see what people are doing. And I don't have any examples right now. They come to me later. That all that just goes in. It's data, and it just goes into your brain, and you see things, and you just go, wow, that's really interesting what that guy's doing. What's that? What's this? What's that? So that's cool. The other thing I want to say is that I really envy and admire the truckers, because all they do is just go back and forth across the country. And I know it's not what I think it is, because they can't just go where they want. But it's really, I have to say, as an experience, going to the truck stops and seeing what they're doing is really cool. Like, it's so interesting, because those guys have this truck stop lifestyle thing is so interesting. Because the truck stops are now more travel stops. They're like big convenience stores, and of course they have showers and stuff like that. And these guys go in there to get diesel fuel and service, and just, you know, they can only drive 8 hours or so at a time, and they got to get off the road. So they don't necessarily, they can't get into rest stops, so they usually go to wherever they can go. But it's always fun to just pull into a Flying J or a travel center or any of the other truck stops, the big ones, the ones that are really big, and just sit there and go, look at all these vehicles and look at the difference between the Peterbilt rigs and the Volvos and what they carry and the sheer power of that machinery. And this is all going on every day. You know, they're out there right now hauling stuff around, and they are hauling. They are the red blood cells of America. They haul stuff from trains that comes off boats to, you know, the mall and to manufacturers, and then they take what the manufacturers make and they haul it somewhere else. I mean, we all know what they do, but it's fascinating to just sort of see that in operation. It's a fascinating vocation that these guys do. So that's really cool. And I wonder how long, you know, there will be drivers. I suppose there will be drivers for the foreseeable future, but there's a lot of talk about driverless trucks, you know, and it's, you know, I don't know how. I have to say, I don't know how driverless trucks are going to do, because, you know, I don't know how driverless trucks are going to navigate some of these situations that I've seen these guys have to do just driving around watching them, you know. I don't know how that's going to work. So that was another great experience. And then one of the things I definitely wanted to get to in this podcast is kind of a play on and playing with imagination and dreams and memories. And one of the things that I do, and I do it all the time, whenever I go through Chicago, generally I go through my town, the town that I grew up in, because the town that I grew up in really hasn't changed very much. And I don't know how many of you do this, but I've been doing this since I got out of high school, since I moved, you know. So I moved from this town, when I was 18 or 19, we moved to Washington. So, I've been going back to that place every few years for a long time since then. And, you know, I've watched it change, but it doesn't change that much, you know. And so I'm just going to throw this out. How many of you have had the dream where you have the floating dream? They call this lucid dreaming. Now, not everyone has this, but basically you're dreaming and you can float and you begin to move around. And so you figure out in the dream that you can direct yourself to go to places that you want to go. And usually this kind of a dream for me starts, and I don't have them that often, but it starts with I'm stuck on the ceiling, and it's usually at my high school or even my elementary school. I'm stuck on the ceiling. And somehow I'm able to work my way across the ceiling to a doorway and get out. And then I start floating around. And then I figure out I can direct myself. And then I do this thing where I will float over. And it's usually night. And I will float over the town that I grew up in. And I'll go visit all these different places that I lived or where things happened. And most of the action in my hometown, and especially in those formative years, and I've often talked about this, when I was 13, 14, 12, 11 years old, we would hang out in the park. And I'm standing in a park very much like that park. It's about the same size. It's a typical suburban park. And it had tennis courts and it had a baseball diamond with an actual pitcher's mound, because it was a little league thing. And that was pretty cool. And a little rise in the back, and then some houses, and then 183rd Street, right? So you know, it was bordered by the street I lived on, and then another street and another street, and then this main drag in the town that I lived in. And we spent a lot of time in that park. We spent a lot of time sitting on the wall at the McCarthy's house, which I've talked about many, many times. And there were a bunch of kids in the neighborhoods. Everybody had six kids. You know, the whole town had everybody in there. We were the tiny family. We had two kids. Most people had four or five kids. And so, you know, on summer evenings like this, this absolute velvet gloom of night, this beautiful summer night feeling. And when you're 12 years old, the world is just being rolled out in front of you. There's no limits. And we would start out the evening at dusk sitting down there at the McCarthy's, and then we'd go play in the park and everything else. So one of the coolest things that I did, and this time it really was like a dream. You know, I went to the park and parked and then turned the truck off. Usually I just leave the truck on and then run out there. But this time I turned the truck off, turned the lights off, as though I would be going there for the last time, and just walked through the park. And I didn't want to record it because I wanted that experience for myself. And I walked through the park, and then I walked up the street, walked down the street from the corner, down to my house, and then down to the other main drag, and walked back up. And at every house, well, there was Debbie, what's her name's house, and that's, you know, that's Carol Barnes's house, and her sister was killed, you know, on the street one time because somebody hit her. And, you know, there's so-and-so's house, and there's the Shooks, and there's, you know, there's the McCarthy's house, and there's that girl Denise Woods's house. You know, I'm using real names, sorry, but I am. There's Gail Wisniewski's house, you know. And then we go out. I wanted to go in the backyard of the house that I grew up in, but I didn't want to intrude. But you know, it's just, and it was like a dream, and it was one of the coolest things that I did. Was just, and I, you know, I do it every time, and I know it's there, but it's this play between this sort of lucid dream and then actual reality. And it's so weird, because at a certain point in your life, you're like, is this real? I mean, I assure you it is, but then again, sometimes I wonder, is this real? Because it has such a dreamlike quality, and you know, I'm looking over at the Gensel's garage where we lit the fire in the tennis court that time, and it blew up and it burned their hedges, and the cops came and everything. And I'm standing there, and it's still there, and everything is exactly the way it was many, many, many years ago. And I'm thinking to myself, it's almost like I'm watching myself as that happens. And it's just so great. It's one of the coolest things about being able to travel, especially in the summer, and go wherever you want. You say, you know what, I'm going to visit my hometown. And I kind of think that when I went to Gloucester, Ohio, I was kind of hoping for that kind of experience, to be able to walk the streets and think, this is where my grandmother lived, or this is where my grandfather lived, or something like that. And you know, it was so disappointing that I just didn't feel comfortable doing that, especially at night. And it was just, you know, that was the thing is, you can give yourself those kinds of gifts in those travels. That was one of the greatest things that I did, was having that, you know, that opportunity to do that. So I'm glad I was able to share that with you. I could have recorded it then, but I just don't think that the observations would have had any context. And then finally, there's just one more thing about travel like this, is the time markers and the signposts and the landmarks fade. So you forget where you had an experience, which is actually one of the coolest things. Because later you remember something and you go, and I used to hear this from, like, you know, with touring bands and stuff would say, I don't know where, you know, we'd be talking to them when they come to the radio station or something, and I'd say something, and they'd say, well, we met this guy, and he told us this, and I'd say, well, where did that happen? And they'd go, I have no idea. You know, my friend Steve that toured with Metallica, he's like, I don't even know where this happened. I don't know where we were, you know. And I used to think, how is that possible? Because I always remember my trips. Well, if you do it enough, after a while, it there's a sameness to it. It's, and each experience is unique. You know, traveling through Arkansas was unique. Going through these little towns in Arkansas was unique. Going through Tennessee was unique. These are unique and wonderful experiences. But you forget where this thing happened. And so then what happens is you call it up when you need it. or when something triggers it, you call it up. But it also comes up in dreams. So you dream about stuff and you're like, where did I know that happened? Where did that happen? And you can't remember. And you're like, is this real? So, you know, we are alive, I guess. We know these things are happening, but that's the cool thing about it, is that after a while, there's a surreal characteristic and a surreal feeling about travel that is just, there is no other thing that gives you that. Forget about all the stuff about leavening your sense of what's important and what's going on. Believe me, America is just fine. Yes, there are places that are dying. I've said this. Yes, there are places that, you know, they're going through changes that are so profound that it's hard to tell. But, you know, when you've been up and down in the coasts and you've been crisscross the country so many times, you've been on these long trips and you traveled, whether you're doing it on a motorcycle. And by the way, when I go to Sturgis, I'm going to interview this guy named Dallas, who just finished a 6,500-mile bike ride, you know, on a motorcycle. And I definitely want to talk to him about those experiences. You know, your sense of outrage and concern is leavened because you're seeing everything. You see the whole country. And it's just fine for the time being. You know, I don't want to go there tonight in this podcast, but people make judgments about things based on things people say. But when you drive around, guess what? You know, you see people doing things that you do every day. They go to the store. When you go to the store in the town, when you go to the Walmart in the town to get some toilet bags or... By the way, I solved that problem. I'm very excited about that. Actually, my friend Steve solved that problem for me. Or you go to get some nuts or something at the Trader Joe's, or you go, whatever you do, you see the locals doing what they do. And guess what? They're just like you and me doing what they do. They're raising their kids. They're running their businesses. They're doing what they do. And you start to realize that we are having a similar experience wherever we are. We're all doing what we're doing, and we're all human beings, and we're all trying to make our lives better. And why does that, you know, why can't we ever think about that? Why is the commentary not leavened by that realization, I guess? And that's as far as I'll go with outrage and everything else in this podcast, especially when you have those kinds of dreamlike experiences on the road that are just peerless. So I'm going to give you one more experience that I had that I want to leave you with as an image because it was so great. And again, this is one of those things I could have reached back and grabbed the digital recorder and taped it, but it wouldn't have been the same because it wouldn't have been the same as me being able to narrate it and give it to you. This was an amazing experience. So Indiana and Illinois, as you know, are very flat. And so you've got it. If there's a place in this country that is like sailing, it is in these places in the Midwest and in Texas and Oklahoma that are flat and the roads are wide and long and there is nothing. And I'm telling you, that's the other thing. Very quickly, this country is empty. If I said it once, I've said it 100 times in these podcasts. There really, when you're in your town, you think this is a densely populated country. Most of the United States is flat out empty. There is nothing. Trees and lakes and, you know, empty places. Empty. 1,500 people in a town. You drive a mile or two out of town and you've forgotten it was even there. Okay? And I don't care if you're in Nevada or Utah or Oklahoma or Illinois. There are parts of Illinois that feel like a desert, even though it's green, right? So one of the best experiences I had was when I was heading up to see my friend in southern Illinois. And when I say southern Illinois, it's south of Chicago. It's Will County, so it's just south of Cook County. So it's really not southern Illinois. It's northern Illinois, comparatively. But you know, I'm driving across Indiana. I was tired, and I was really didn't know where I was. I mean, I had plotted, I'm going to go across this road, and I'm going to get on 41, and I'm going to go up 41 to where I need to go, and then I'm going to cut over at a certain point into Illinois, which is just south of where he lives. And I started out that day. I didn't sleep that much because, you know, I've got the hammock and it's dark and it's hot. And so, you know, yeah, I can fall asleep about 3 o'clock, but by 9 o'clock with the sun beating down on that thing, I'm going to wake up, right? So, which is fine. So I was tired and I had too much coffee and I was driving along and I was enjoying myself because it's just flat and I'm driving on 41, which is like a 2-lane, you know, split highway. So it's 4 lanes. And I think I was near Lafayette, which is, don't even get me started about the industrialization in Indiana. But I was in Lafayette, just got out of Lafayette, and, you know, now it's empty again, right? So Lafayette's a very busy town, 3 shifts at these plants, and it was shift change, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was super busy. But there were storms all around that day, and I'm driving on that, and that's where I got that picture of the storm. I was on 41 driving, and just this amazing moment, no other cars around, and this massive storm that looked like it had to have been 10, 15 miles long, with this huge storm system with white clouds and deep deep blues and grays and black in this storm system and lightning all over the place. Like you'd see 4 or 5 strikes at a time. And then in the distance, in this darkness, these stark, almost alien looking, windmills, the big ones, you know, the wind power things, just the lights blinking and the either slowing down because they're breaking them because it's going to be a storm or spinning. It was fantastic. And I just had this moment and I was just like, this is great. Because when would I have seen this? You know, I went down to do the purpose of the trip was storm chasing and I'm driving along and the storms were chasing me. And here I am driving, just thoroughly enjoying this storm. And then it was this whole odyssey of driving into the storm system, and you could not see in front of the windshield. It was that intense with hail and lightning, and the wipers were on full, and, you know, it was great. So that is probably the third or fourth just great experience from this trip. And, you know, when you do the overland thing, when you travel for any length of time, you have these kinds of experiences, and I am so grateful to kind of have lost my job and started podcasting so I can do this stuff. Well, thanks once again to xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Again, if you thought you knew xgovernmentcars.com, think again, because they have the line on the low mileage Expeditions and the Yukons and lots of other great, great vehicles that are one owner fleet maintained government vehicles. Visit xgovernmentcars.com today, 2420 Nevada Avenue North, or you can get your butt down there, or you can just get your butt over to xgovernmentcars.com and see what they've got. Call them old school at 763-777-8782, xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Well, I have so many emails that I've saved that it's hard for me to actually find all the emails from the people who made donations to the BobDavisPodcast.com, but I want to thank a couple of people. First of all, I want to thank Brett Severson for sending me $50 on the trip. I want to thank Ed Nass, who has contributed many, many times to the Bob Davis podcasts. I think, and I want to thank Randy Walker, who sent me $25. I don't know how much Ed sent me at this point. I'm just going through the email right now to see if there's any more donations for the Mobile Podcast Command. This stuff, you guys, you know, this put gas in the tank, basically. This kept diesel fuel in the tank, and it really fueled the trip. So I really appreciate the donations at the Bob Davis Podcast. And I'm not asking for them right now. I'm just saying I appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes, which is great because there's no inserted ad. Podcast Addict, and I've noticed it coming up in the analytics. Podcast Addict pulls the podcast right from the BobDavisPodcast.com, so you can listen to it with no spots. Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, TunedIn.com. I appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and the following on Facebook and Twitter, such as social media is. My favorite is Instagram, and I am the Bob Davis Podcasts at Instagram, and also on YouTube, the Bob Davis Podcast YouTube channel at the Bob Davis Podcast on YouTube. If you want to see some pictures from the trip, some of them are in there. So I wasn't too diligent about shooting, but I do have some pretty good videos in there from some of the crazy stuff that I did. So that that's up. Thanks again for the donations for the Bob Davis Podcast Mobile Podcast Command Unit 8. And thanks for listening to podcast 642, right?